Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
Please don't come to my restaurant and tell me what a great inspiration I've been to you unless I've inspired you to do something. Go out and do what you love. Don't be working for other people's dreams.
This week, our guest is former IT executive, pizza blog commenter, and one of the nation's most interesting pizza entrepreneurs, Pauly G, founder of the eponymous Pauly G's, one of the best new pizzerias that's opened in New York City in the last 10 years. And now he's opening places all over the country. Pauly has had a unique path to becoming a pie man, and we'll discuss that and more today. So welcome to Special Sauce, Pauly G.
Thank you, Ed. It's a great honor to be here.
Oh, please. First of all, let's get one thing out of the way. Pauly G is not your real name.
No, it's not. My last name, my ancestors would tell you, is Giannone.
Giannone.
And my friends in Brooklyn will tell you it's Giannone.
I see. So in Italy, they'd call you one thing, and in Brooklyn, they call you another.
There you go.
So tell us about life at the Giannone family table.
Well, we don't sit around it very much anymore. I'm at my pizzeria 6 nights a week.
Right. But what about when you were a kid?
Ah, well, I used to go to my grandmother's house every Sunday, 2 p.m., pasta, usually ziti with red sauce with meatballs in it and bragiole, and always ziti, it seemed.
So it was classic Sunday sauce stuff.
Oh, yeah, and ginger ale.
And ginger ale. You washed it down with ginger ale.
I did. Canada Dry.
And what about at home? Like, what was your mom a good cook?
My mom was a Jew. And she was
with a name like Giannone. I knew that.
There you go. But she was a better Italian cook than my Sicilian grandmother, who was a very good Italian cook. Yeah, and she would, and I would always have to have pasta on Sundays. My house had to have pasta on Sundays. We didn't call it pasta then; it was macaroni.
Right.
And it was always like a Sunday sauce, like my grandmother's, the same kind of thing. And you know, if a Sunday went by without that, it was very upsetting.
And what would dinner be like during the week?
Mrs. Paul's fish sticks,
clam sticks,
things like that.
Mrs. Paul's clam sticks were awesome.
I never had those.
Oh my God!
Do they still make them?
I don't know. I have to check, but they were delicious.
And things like that. My mother also, she cooked. I always remember her making Progresso linguine and white clam on Fridays because even though my mother was a Jew, I was raised Catholic, and you know, we had fish on Fridays.
You were clearly in a cross-cultural household.
I was. And my sister, who, you know, when I was very small and she still lived at home, she loved to cook too, and she used to make great things. My mother also made great matzo brei, by the way.
Well, I was going to ask if she also made Jewish food.
She did. My father, he was Italian, and I give him a lot of credit for where I am today because most Italian men, it was like, you know, my wife has to cook me dinner, but although my mother did most of the cooking, my father never shied away from the stove. You know, if my mother needed help or something, he was happy to cook. And
He wasn't just drinking wine and chomping on a cigar.
No, not at all. He didn't smoke at that point, from what I remember. And he loved to eat too. Loved to eat.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in what they now call Kensington.
Kensington, okay? Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn. It was, we referred to it, somebody asked me where I lived, I said Church and McDonald. It's where the G train now ends. G train used to end at Smith and 9th Street, but now it ends at Church Avenue. And I am a great example of the pizza cognition theory.
Because yes,
I remember the very first pizza slice that I
remember. We should explain what the pizza cognition theory is, which Sam Sifton wrote up for my book, which states that the first pizza you taste becomes the paradigmatic pizza in your mind.
And that was absolutely the case for me. I will modify that a little bit because I believe I must have had some pizza before that I don't remember. I think it's the first slice that you remember.
Right.
So there was a little place, it was a half a pizzeria, It was maybe 10 feet wide. It was on McDonald Avenue near church. I don't even remember the name. I used to think the name was the Leaning Tower of Pizza because they had the Leaning Tower of Pisa in there, and I actually think it said that, but there was another name for it.
Got it.
Long gone, but I remember that slice. It was a classic New York slice, and to this day, if a slice tastes like that, I'm in heaven.
That's awesome. So though you were a serious pizza lover early on, initially, you never considered making pizza a career, right?
Not at all. Not at all.
Like, so what you ended up, you've said that you didn't graduate from high school. Is that true?
I did not. I got a GED eventually, and I went on to not graduate from two colleges.
So you were a non-graduate of three different schools.
Paulie G's is the first thing I've ever done in my life to completion. Okay.
So you dropped out of high school and started working.
I did.
But
I
not in pizzerias.
No, I worked in the New York Cocoa Exchange. That was my first job.
Really?
And then I got a little passion for photography along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to take the GED so I could go to School of Visual Arts. Okay? So I did that for a while. You know, I began to see that what I really wanted to do with photography, number one, was going to cost me a great deal of money. I wanted to have a studio.
Which you didn't have.
Photography. And I didn't have the money. Nobody really talked to me about how I could get that money. But what I saw was many, many years of being a photographer's assistant. And it kind of discouraged me. But the thing that discouraged me even more was the school that I went to. It was a fine arts school. I was going for a BFA. And if my work was not morose. If your work wasn't morose in that school, you were a nobody, okay?
You mean your work was too optimistic?
I guess so. Because 2 years in a row, they have this end of year. I'll never forget this. They have this end of year show. And each time I invited a girl to come with me to the show, okay? You don't know what's in the show. And each time I got there, none of my work was in the show. None was there.
That does not encourage amorous activity.
No, that was not good in that sense. But it all turned out well in the end. So,
and okay. So you ended up becoming an IT person.
I did. What happened was, actually, I tried to follow up on this photography thing. I went down to share an apartment with a friend of mine who moved down to Miami. I went down there. I got a job in photography, being an assistant. It turned out the woman was a mad woman. And she fired me after 3 days because I got her flat fixed rather than getting the tire replaced that she just paid for. This is a true story. But in any case, I wound up working in a shoe store. And that was in 1975.
Uh-huh.
And as 1976 started approaching, I started getting terribly homesick. I wanted to go back to New York. The Yankees were opening up a brand new stadium. And I wanted to be part of that. I watched Dog Day Afternoon and I saw... the street where I used to hang out and it was very entrepreneurial at the age of 15, 16. And I started getting homesick and I found my way back home and I didn't get a job right away. I went to the first 8 games in the new Yankee Stadium.
So that's pretty thrilling.
It was. And I went to the first night game. But eventually I got a job through our superintendent's in the building's son. He worked for the Port Authority in New York and New Jersey. He got me a job in the mailroom. And I went there and I worked there for... actually, he did that before I went to Florida. I worked there for a little while, then I went to Florida. Sorry about that. And then I came back in 1976 and I got reinstated there. And I worked there and I had a great job. It was the summertime. And I was one of the more, I guess, trustworthy people working in the mailroom. So they gave me a van, and I drove around Manhattan dropping off mail at all of the Port Authority facilities. Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I'd go to lunch in different places. I'd meet girls at lunchtime. It was great. And matter of fact, one of the buildings I used to go to is 111 8th Avenue, which you may be familiar with. It's now like Google.
Yeah, yeah, it's part of Google. Yeah.
And I used to drive this van into an elevator and go up to the 5th floor on the elevator and drive out and deliver the mail. It was a great
That's
experience.
That's awesome.
But eventually, you know, I got into accounting there and I had some ambitions. I thought, you know, this is what you do. You know, my father was very happy because he always used to tell me, You know, get a good civil service job. You know,
so that was his idea of yes. prosperity and security.
Security, absolutely. He, you know, he lived through the Depression. He was a musician in the Depression. He used to go up to the Catskills in the summertime, you know, as a musician, because they would pay you, you know, they give you a little bit of pay, they give you room and board.
Right.
And the women loved them. Right. I got pictures. If this wasn't a radio show, I got great pictures to show you. But so I did that, and you know, I said, well, I have to climb my way up the corporate ladder if I'm going to be successful in life and have the things that I want. So I started doing that, and I was in accounting for a little while. Oh, and that year, fate have it, I met my wife. I met my wife in a bar in Bay Ridge in November of 1976. I tell you the exact date, but I don't want people to think that, you know, I know this exact date.
Right. No, no. It's you're setting a bad precedent for husbands everywhere.
Yeah, I don't want to get them in trouble. So, but eventually, I decided that I wanted to get involved in IT. They call it the electronics division back then. They had punch cards and everything, and it was crazy. But I saw that as the future. I saw that as being lucrative. But what I didn't think about was just because I was in accounting, I was good with math, I thought that, you know, I guess I could be a geek, right? So that's the path I took. I worked there for a while. You know, we got married, blah, blah, blah. I saw what other people did there. They didn't pay all that well. It was a great place to work. The Port Authority in New York and New Jersey in the late 70s, early 80s was a tremendous place to work. We used to have Christmas parties every year that I still crave to this day. You would go from floor to floor. Each different department had their own party, and everybody in the whole building would wind up at the best party eventually.
Right.
But I eventually I saw that people would take the experience they got at the Port Authority and go out into the corporate world.
Got it.
You know. And I had that same plan, and I wound up doing that and going to AT&T, okay? I wanted to get away from the commute I had every day on the train, so we wanted to go someplace out in the country, quote-unquote country, and we did. I got a job in Piscataway, New Jersey. We bought a home in Warren Township, New Jersey. It was used to be a log, it looked like a log cabin, but it was in a vacation community that, as New York became more accessible, it became more of a year-round place.
So you did that. You did that for quite a while, right? How long were you at AT&T?
I was there in total for the three different companies I worked for, 18 years.
That's a long time, dude.
It was a long time. And I wasn't really getting where I wanted to get after a while.
Yeah, and you talked about that because I looked at one of the interviews you did actually on Slice. And where I first got to know you was as a passionate Slice commenter on our pizza blog. And so it was obvious that you had a passion for pizza.
I did. I always loved pizza, but the only pizza I really knew and loved was New York style pizza.
Right.
Regular slice, Sicilian slice, and I had many places I loved. And then, you know, the upside down at L&B. But along the way, I discovered Totono's. I kept on hearing about it. I had friends who lived in Coney Island always mentioned it. And I just envisioned it as another, I mean, what could be so good about it?
No, Totono's is a life-changing experience.
And it did. It changed. It's exactly what it did. It changed my life. And that's how I got more interested in other forms of pizza. As soon as I found out, you know, that the opinion was the reason their pizza is different because it's made with coal, I started hunting out other places. And I was a real pizza enthusiast at that point. I got into, you know, wood-burning pizza. We'd go on pizza tours.
Right, and you built a wood-burning oven.
Well, we'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to back up a little bit.
All right, yeah.
Because you asked me how I wound up here, and what happened was, I always knew that, you know, I wasn't getting where I wanted to get. You know, my bills were accumulating. I wasn't as successful as somebody should be after that many years in IT if I wanted to have the things, you know, out of life that
right.
I wanted,
and you talked
me
in
and
this
my family
interview
to enjoy.
About a freight train that was coming at
I
you.
I did. That was a great motivator. Okay. You know, I was not, I knew that I was not going to be able to go back and turn my children into 10-year-olds again and do all the things that I would have loved to done with them, like going skiing.
Mm-hmm.
So I just decided we were going to do these things and I'll figure out how to pay for it later. It'll all work out. Because You know, it was going to work out. But what was working out was the bills were piling
up. Right. The bank was very happy about the debts you were incurring.
Right, especially at 18% credit card debt.
Yeah.
But then I would roll it into, a home equity loan or whatever, refinance my mortgage, and then
but
I'm
you always just reshuffling the deck.
Exactly. And it wasn't going away. And my wife would keep on saying, we have to spend less money. I said, no, we have to make more money. Okay, because I was not going to spend less than I was making. Then life just wouldn't have been very much fun at all, and I owed it to my children. So my kids had a great upbringing. We went on ski vacations every year. We went on summer vacations. We lived in a nice house in a nice town, But it wasn't what I wanted, and I was trying to figure out what to do. I thought, and I loved to ski. I loved ski towns. It was very romantic to me. And I thought we could live in a ski town and maybe run, a little ski lodge, a bed and breakfast or something. And I kept on searching for that. But also, I loved to cook. I would make excuses. Anytime there was an event, a communion, a confirmation.
You would cook
baptism,
for everybody.
Right. I said, we're gonna do it at home. We're not going to spend money on a catering hall or something. I want to cook for people. I would do that on the holidays whenever I can. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed playing music for them. I'd have a whole playlist when people came over. I'd have reunions of all the people that I used to take drugs with.
So you were actually doing pop-ups before there were pop-ups.
I was doing pop-ups before there were pop-ups. And it was more than just pizza. Matter of fact, it wasn't pizza at all. I never made pizza. I would go, every once in a while at these things, I wanted to have something like pizza. I would buy, naan.
Right.
And I would put sauce on and cheese and I put it in the oven.
Hilarious.
And that didn't work out too well either because the naan was already cooked before I put it in the oven. So, but I did love to cook and everyone would say to me, you should open up a restaurant. And I said, you don't know what you're talking about. I have no desire to do that. I envisioned this thing, working through the weekends, first of all, didn't appeal to me. And I saw it as work. And I saw it as very complicated in that you have to time all these different things, entrees and appetizers and you have to buy all these different ingredients and, how do you not, waste a fortune of it? And I just want to know part of that,
Right.
And I always heard people say, oh, the restaurant business is tough.
Right.
And it was like, okay. So I would tell them, now you have no idea what you want. But somewhere along the way, a friend of mine came to me. He had a construction company, a neighbor right around the corner from me. And he said he had this proposal for me. There was this franchise called Le Peep. It started in Colorado. There were maybe 30 of them in Colorado. They served breakfast and lunch. They had these cute little names for stuff and the different breakfasts. And it was very good. They opened up a couple in New Jersey. One closed down, but there was one that had been very successful in Edison for a long time, 20 years maybe. And he said that he would open the place for me, build it, and I would just have to give him 5% of the gross. I'd have to go out there for 8 weeks. I don't know how I was going to do that, but I was going to worry about that later. It sounded like a good idea because I like the fact that I still have my life.
Right.
Because maybe I'd have to get in there by 6 in the morning.
But you would be your own boss.
Well, I wasn't even thinking about the own boss thing. We're going to get to that, too. I hope you got a lot of tape going. You're done by 2:30 in the afternoon. You don't serve dinner. I can spend time at night with my family, go to my son's baseball games, so on and so forth. And on the weekends, if somebody has a wedding, I could go to the wedding. So I liked that idea. And we started looking. And thank God we didn't find anything. We looked in a number of places in New Jersey. And along the way, I said, I love pizza. I started going to these other pizzerias. I remember going to Numero 28. I love Numero 28.
Oh, yeah, I know Numero 28.
And he had an oven there.
Right.
Crazy guy,
New
Salvatore.
New York City pizzeria, Roman style.
Right, right. And it was like a combination of Roman style and Neapolitan, actually.
Right.
And but he had an oven there. And there was also another place I discovered in Nutley, New Jersey, where the guy built his own oven. He was a Napoli Don. He built his oven for his restaurant. It was called, Queen Margarita. Somebody sued him, and he changed it to Regina Margarita. But he built the oven himself, and I thought about having either the guy from Numero 28, Salvatore Olivella, never forget him. I know you know him.
Yeah.
And and this guy, Pasquale from Nutley, I thought about asking them to build an oven, at home because I started thinking, I want to do this. I want to build in this oven at home. I went to I checked prices of having one built for me, what it was going to cost, either having somebody
expensive.
Build it or you get a prefab. It was a lot of money. And somebody turned me on to Forno Bravo and free oven plants, Pompeii oven plants. So I started looking into that, and I said, I'm going to do this. I decided I'm going to open up a pizzeria, and you know, I have to prove to myself I could do it.
Right. So you started making pizza.
Well, hold on.
Yeah, yeah.
Hold on. Not yet. Okay. I went out and I bought the bricks. I said, I'm going to do this. I figure once I make that expense, and it was the bricks were only $100.
Right.
But once I made that step, that's, you know, I walked through that wall of fear. That was the very first wall of fear that I walked through.
Uh-huh.
And that just got me started. I knew, like, you know, what, you know, if I try to build this thing, it could be a mess. I said, the heck, but I'm just going to do it. We'll worry about it later. And I went to my friend. Who, being in construction and being Italian, he took great pride and had a passion for masonry. My friend who was going to open up the thing, I guess he was disappointed in the La Peep thing. We never really talked about that, but I told him I wanted to do this pizza thing. And I just assumed that he was going to invest in this thing, you know. And so we started building this oven. I told him what I wanted to do, and he was very helpful. We started in, early September of 2007, and my son... was very excited about this. My oldest son, Michael, he had said that he wanted to be a pilot when he was 11, and I encouraged him to do it, and I said, you got to believe in yourself. You could do it, Michael, blah, blah, blah. And he saw that I wanted to do it. He got very excited for me that I was doing this. He was calling up asking about it. And
because he thought you were going to do something you loved.
Right. He wanted to see me happy. He wanted to see me take on a challenge like that and step out and step up. And I started doing that with Russell. My friend's name was Russell. And it was coming along, but it was coming along slowly because we only did it on the weekend. And he calls me and he said, Dad, how's it going with the oven? This might have been sometime in October. I said, well, it's going okay, but, you know, it's been a little slow because of this. He said, you're going to have pizza for Thanksgiving, right? You know, I'm coming home with Kahoa, his Hawaiian friend. He was in the Air Force Academy. They were in the Air Force Academy together. And I said, well, I don't know. And he said, Dad, listen, you can't be talking crap. He didn't say crap, but I'm not sure I could say shit on here, so I said crap. All right. And he challenged me. And at that point, you know, you have to, if you want to accomplish things in life, you need two things, belief and commitment, okay? The oven, to build the oven, that was to put belief in me that I could make pizza for the public. Okay, and then you have to make commitments. And I was telling people all along, before the oven was built, I'm going to open up a pizzeria.
Right. But your son sort of hammered that point home about the commitment.
Right, the commitment to the date.
Right.
You know, and he said, I'm coming off for Thanksgiving.
Because he was busting you. He's like, enough with, you know, brick by brick.
Right.
When are you going to be finished?
I'm coming home, and I better get a pizza out of that oven, he said. And you know, so sure enough, 2 days before Thanksgiving when he came home, we had pizza out of the oven. So a deadline's a beautiful thing. I love deadlines, you know.
And that's about when the time you started commenting on Slice, right?
Actually, yes. I was commenting even before then. I would go out to different places, and I would take pictures of my meals, and I'd post them on Flickr.
Right.
And I started, you know, doing that more and more. And, you know, so my photography background, I wasn't using an expensive camera. I was actually using a Canon SureShot, but I made it work.
I had a Canon SureShot.
They were
fine
great.
Little camera.
They were great. And it allowed me to, you know, build my persona as a, you know, as a food enthusiast. And when I started commenting on Slice, I might post something out there if I went to New Park Pizza.
Right.
Something. I would post some pictures out
we
there.
We should explain to people that Slice was a pizza blog started by Adam Kuban, who became Serious Eats' first managing editor, and Slice became part of Serious Eats.
Right. And someday soon, Ed is going to revive Slice.
Yes, I am.
Because it was
a wonderful
place for pizza enthusiasts to go.
It's true. Yeah. So you would comment about places you've been, and you started inviting us.
I did. Well, what happened was, after the oven was built, you know, I started putting pictures out there, and I started kind of promoting myself in a clandestine way. And I didn't invite anybody. I wanted you guys to invite yourself. That was very important to me. I know, it's kind of like dating, you know. You want to get somebody to be waiting for, you know, you to ask them, right? So what happened was, and it was all through Serious Eats, it was all through Slice, Adam wrote a story on a guy named Josh Levin, who I believe he went to Harvard.
He was a friend of Kenji's.
Right. He was a friend of Kenji's, and they built a website together called GoodEater.org. And Adam posted an article that he did on there called Pizza Oven Lifestyles Episode 1. Josh was in graduate school at this point. I believe it was NYU after graduating Harvard because he couldn't get into a good school. And he found this chili farmer there. What he was doing in South Africa was working with local farmers to be able to survive, you know, versus big agro.
Right.
And the banks, you know, they helped the banks make, you know, friendly loans to them and so on and so forth. I don't know all the details of it. But he found this one chili farmer who on the farm had this pizza oven that he built. And he kept it going constantly. He would feed the farm workers. He would feed his family. And he told his whole story about it. And he posted it on goodeater.org. And Adam, you know, being the resourceful person that he was, you know, found it. And I guess knowing Kenji. And he posted it. And I read it. And at the very end of the article, Josh said, if you know anybody else with a pizza oven lifestyle, let me know. So all I did was I had a folder on Flickr just of my pizza oven and the pizzas that I made out of it. Now, at this point, this was 2008. I hadn't gotten any bloggers to come to my house yet. I had friends and family come in every 2 weeks. I was making pizza. At first, I bought the dough in Stop and Shop.
Right.
Okay? In Baskin Ridge, New Jersey. I buy these little packages of dough. And, I at first, I wasn't even letting the dough come to room temperature. It was crazy. But I always made my own fresh mozzarella. And I started experimenting in different ways. I knew right away, I said, I have to make my own dough. So I started doing that and experimenting and on and on. And once I felt that my pizza was to the point where it's something that I could serve to the public at one point, that's when I got interested in getting other people to come other than just my friends and family. But getting my friends and family to come there was a godsend.
You know, right.
It allowed me to practice and experiment. But more importantly, it allowed them to see what I was doing and taste my pizza. And many of the people that came to my house are the ones that wound up invested in my restaurant.
Wow. That's incredible. So then you began to invite people like us.
Hang on.
All right.
Josh came. It was Thanksgiving weekend 2008. He brought his whole family. He brought a guy named Matt, who's this great guitar tech. He brought his father. He brought his brother. And it was a great pizza tasting. And he wrote up a whole thing on goodeater.org, which was exactly what I wanted him to do. As they tell people, I invite people to my house. I made my own homemade limoncello. I would give them the limoncello right before they had any food in their stomach to absorb it, make sure they got a nice buzz on. Okay? I fed them for free. The pizza was going to taste better because of the limoncello right off the bat. And I'm feeding him for free. He went back and he wrote nice things. He didn't say one negative thing about me.
It's because of the limoncello.
There you go. It's very important. So he did that. And Adam posted it. My goal all along, and forgive me, Adam, but my goal all along was to get Adam to come to my house to try my pizza and write nice things about it. I'd be a fool not to have that goal, right? And we were, you know, we were online friends at that. I don't know if we even met at that point. I think we did. I don't recall. I remember I wanted to go to his little pizza meetups, and it was like he was doing this, and it got out of hand or something.
Yeah, that's when I met him, at Totono's.
Ah.
He was doing a pizza meetup in Totono's, and he couldn't believe. He thought I was a celebrity because I'd written a book on pizza.
You are a celebrity.
Yeah, no. I'm not a celebrity, but yeah. I love the fact that he thought I was.
There you go. I know the feeling. So he wrote the article, and in the very first paragraph, he told me just what I needed to know. He told me that he wanted to come and try my pizza because he said, blah, 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 Josh Levin scored an invite to Paulie G's pizza tasting. So that told me that he felt that that was something worth going to. Last thing I wanted to do was beg Adam to come to my house.
Right.
That was not going to work, okay? And I think I did kind of hint once or twice, but I left it alone. But after that, I started working on it a little more. I said, you know, I'll come out. But it took until Easter weekend, 2009 for him to finally come. There were a couple of other bloggers. This woman's very funny. Stacy, I forget her last name. She has a blog called Stacy Snacks, a wonderful blog. She cooks all the time at home. She lives in Summit, New Jersey. Beautiful stuff. But she was very funny. She read about this thing, and she maneuvered her way into getting invited, which is exactly right. What I wanted. I wanted people trying to get invited, right? So I got Adam to come. Now, there was one thing about my pizza tastings. My oven was outside, okay? And let's talk about my oven for a second, okay? It was pale green when I started, but I wanted it to be nicer than that. And I got this vision of a Mediterranean pizza oven, not just Italian or whatever, but or Italian, but subtle. So I didn't do anything red, white, and green. Actually, there's a tiny little red, white, and green flag on a chimney. But I painted it white. And being a fan of Sun Valley Ski Resort, if you go online and Google Sun Valley, you'll see their logo is Sun Valley in royal blue letters and a sun in back of it with a face. And that inspired me to do that on the oven. I wrote Napoli in royal blue letters, and I had a sun over it. And because I was doing the limoncello thing and the Naples region was full of lemons, I put two little lemon pictures on the side. And that's the genesis of the logo that you see today and everything else, just that little thing that I did. So in any case, the oven is outside, and I'm making these pizzas inside, okay? I couldn't tend the oven and make the pizzas, but, you know, it was a long way. So I would always enlist somebody to be the oven master.
Right.
And, you know, some people were better than others. My son was very good at it, okay? Other people were very good at it. I noticed Yankee fans tend to be very good at that. They took a great deal of pride in being the best oven maker around. But whenever I seemed to assign a Met fan to that task, they were inside. You know, I come out with a pizza, and I need a 1,000-degree oven. And I'm standing there, and it's, like, dark in there. And they're inside on the couch watching the match.
I mean, this is really – this. You're casting aspersions on Met fans.
I'm just telling you the truth. I'm not going to mention names. They know who they are.
All right.
Okay? I won't mention to that one of them is my accountant either. I'm not going to say that. All right? But so when Adam was finally going to come, I wanted there to be the best oven master I could have there for it. Easter was April 12th that year. Happened also to be my son's birthday. Okay? So I called Michael. And I said, Michael, how would you like to come home for your birthday? Adam Kubin's coming for pizza tasting. I'd love for you to work the fire for me. Okay? Can you go? Sure, I'll come home. So I booked him a ticket. And he was coming into LaGuardia, I think about 9 o'clock. All along, I was looking for a place. You know, I was going to open up in New Jersey. I was going to open up. Dan Ricker and I, if you don't know who Dan Ricker is, you could Google him. We're actually looking together to do something. I met him in his pizzeria, Arturo's, in Maplewood Village one time. And we actually started looking to do something together. But slowly but surely, I felt, number one, I didn't want a partner. I always remember people talking about partners and you don't want a partner. It's like having another wife. Although I love my wife dearly, I know what they were saying, okay? So I decided to go on my own. I was going to open up in Jersey City. I tried to convince myself that Jersey City was the sixth borough. But, you know, I was going to Brooklyn, and I was seeing what was happening in North Brooklyn. I was enamored with it. And I knew that wasn't happening in Jersey City. It wasn't going to happen very quickly.
So that's why you opened in Greenpoint.
Yes. But what pushed me over the edge there, a couple of things. I didn't want to take too much of a risk. I still had my house, my family. I thought that I'd be able to do this while still working. I have somebody there during the day prepping. You open at night, blah, blah, blah. And I would drive there at night. And I knew it was going to be a grind. But a friend of mine, you know, I was telling him about doing this, and this is one of my dearest friends. He said, you know, you're going to have investors, right? You're going to need investors. Those investors are going to want to know that you're spending 100% of your focus on that restaurant and not on your job. And he said, you know, they wouldn't mind if you took extra salary,
right?
You know, so that you could support yourself. So that kind of green-lighted me. And two other things pushed me over the edge, okay? A liquor license in New Jersey, you have to buy. It's like a pocket thing. You buy it from somebody who has one. They don't issue new ones. they were dirt cheap in Jersey City at $140,000. My town, it's over $500,000, right? So that was kind of a barrier there. The other thing was, I wanted my pizza enthusiast friends, all of my friends on Slice and other people who, you know, were enthusiasts to come to my pizzeria. So I knew that I had to have, you know, there had to be press about me and, you know, people needed to write about me. So I wrote to Amanda at, I guess it was Eater, right? Amanda, I don't know.
Yeah, Amanda Kloot.
Sorry, Amanda. I said, you know, if I open up in New Jersey, would you cover me? And she says, probably not. All right. So that was like, okay.
So that clinched Brooklyn.
So I said, well, what happened was, now I'm thinking about Brooklyn. You know, along the way, while I was still looking to do things in Jersey, I picked the brains of anybody who was doing what I wanted to do. I would talk with Anthony Mangieri.
Mark Iacono.
I'll get there. Mark Iacono, Matthew Palombino, and they were all very helpful. Encouraging, really. And I fell in love with Williamsburg. I wanted to open up in Williamsburg. But, you know, it was expensive there. Although I found a spot that to this day I'm in love with. It's been four restaurants since they said that they wouldn't lower the rent from like twice what I wound up paying in Greenpoint. But it turned out for the best. But I talked to Matthew and I said, Matthew, because he really helped me a lot. I said, if I open up over on the other side of Williamsburg, is that's okay, right? I don't know, that's a little too close, Paulie, in his Belgian accent. So I started looking. He encouraged me to look in Park Slope. He loved Park Slope. You know, Park Slope's a very nice place. I'm so glad I opened in Greenpoint.
Yeah.
What happened was, to cut to the chase here, I looked around. I looked for, like, the next best neighborhood. I saw what Roberta's did going out. I love Roberta's. And by the way, back to Mark Iacono. Nobody was...
Mark Iacono owns a place called Lucali in Brooklyn, which is awesome.
And in Miami.
And in Miami.
And it's wonderful in Miami because you can get drinks, you can get salad, and you can get dessert.
Right.
It's great. I'm going there this weekend. He was the greatest inspiration to me. Roberta's was a great inspiration because they showed me you could take a place that's a dump and make it, you know, make it very special without spending a lot of money.
Right.
Great inspiration. Mark was a great inspiration because at 38 years old, never working in a restaurant in his life, as far as I know, he was in construction. He opened up a pizzeria, and literally, within a matter of days, he had the most popular pizzeria in New York. People were waiting online. And that was just... You know,
right. And by the way, that happened to you. So when you finally opened in Greenpoint, that was what was interesting. You were getting crowds really fast.
Well, not exactly. Because for the first 5 months I was open, I could not serve alcohol.
Right.
You could not even bring your own.
Right.
But I'm telling you, overnight... you know, I was like, it was right around this time, actually, August 25th or something. Then the crowds really started showing up. Once they could get drunk at my restaurant, everything was great.
So now you have this amazing success, which has been a very spiritual adventure for you, I would say. You know, you might not call it that, but I would. I think it really represents who you are in a way that working in IT or even working at the Port Authority didn't. But you've taken Greenpoint, and it's really successful. But you have this unique way of expanding, and I'd like to hear a little bit more about that because it's franchising, but it's much more spiritual than franchising.
Well, I'm glad that you see that. What happened was when I opened up the restaurant, I opened it knowing that there could only be one Paulie G's because I felt I had to be there. And as I found as time went on, once I stopped making pizza, I knew I wanted to be there all the time. When I was making pizza, that could be rough for a while. When I was there, it was frustrating because customers wanted to talk to me, okay? Light bulbs needed to be changed, and nobody could do that but me, apparently, okay? And, you know, if I walked away from the pizza table to do things or to talk to a guest or something, it backed things up. But I knew that I had to build it in that way. And thank God I did. I made a few decisions that are just wonderful decisions. And what I didn't realize at the time, and I said before, I didn't want a partner. Thank God I don't have a partner. I don't have to reconcile my vision with anyone, okay? I make a decision, and that's it. And I love that. I never realized I never realized, you know, how much I'd love that. And more importantly, I didn't realize that I was born to be the boss and not have a boss.
Right.
I'm totally stifled by having a boss. I have to be excited about me doing something for me in the way I want to do it, and that's it.
Right.
I did it in that way, and Paula G's became successful. And I knew that, you know, I wanted to do something with it. I owed it to myself, you know, I owed it to my investors. And also, I just wanted to see it grow, you know.
Right.
It's, you know, my restaurant is more than, first of all, it's not a job to me.
No.
It's not work for me at all. I do, and this is what's most important. I'm doing what I love, and I'm getting paid to do it.
Okay? I feel the same way.
It's wonderful.
Is there anything better in life?
No, there really isn't. There really isn't. And you know, so many people think that, okay, I have to get another job, this and that. You know, if you're a policeman, if you're a fireman, you're a teacher, you're a scientist or something, those are vocations that, you know, you should be working as part of a bigger organization. But stepping out on your own is something that people need to do. They should not be looking for other people to take care of them. They should not be mm-hmm. looking to make sure they get 99 weeks of unemployment if they don't have a job. You need to take care of yourself. And this gave me the opportunity to do that. And I chose something that I'm happy doing it and getting paid. You know, when people said, you know, you should open up a restaurant, and I said they were crazy, you know, they were.
Well, right.
I chose pizza. I was emboldened and decided I would do it because pizza was simple. So I had this simple concept. And now I learned a while ago. I was a multi-level marketeer. I had an Amway distributorship, my wife and I. And because of that, I'm where I am today. I didn't do much with it for whatever reason, right? I could go on forever about that. No need to. But what I learned along the way, they would encourage you to believe in yourself, to make commitments, set goals. They'd bring in speakers that you'd listen to. You go into, you know, big arenas.
Right.
And I learned along the way, you can help yourself by helping other people.
Right.
So I decided that I was going to take everything I learned along the way and transfer it to other people and help them open up their own place. And thinking back to Russell and his proposal to me. By the way, Russell didn't think it was a good idea to invest in Paulie G's. But I owe him my life where I am today, because without him,
this is,
you know,
Russell,
with that seed. The guy who helped me build my pizza oven,
right,
who we're
going to
open up
Got
a peep with.
And so you found other people who were passionate about pizza.
Right. I wanted to take everything that I learned. And Russell had said, you know, I'll give you 5% of the gross. So I thought about that idea, and I said, okay, I could do something like this. And I started speaking with people about it. I was looking in Philadelphia first. And my friend Kelly actually came up to Philadelphia to look at a spot. We started talking about it, and I realized, you don't need to move your family from Baltimore for this. We'll find something in Baltimore. But I started talking to lawyers. And they said, oh, you have to form a franchise company. I said, okay, let me try another lawyer. Oh, you have to form a franchise company. The FTC will come along, whoever it was. They're going to tell you that anyway. So I decided that's what I was going to do. I formed a company to do all of this, and I started looking for people who had a passion like me, and I wanted to give them the opportunity to do this as well. And people came to me. I really didn't hunt them down.
No.
All along, after a wonderful visit with Chris Bianco, who, thanks to you,
Chris Bianco,
I got
from
that.
Pizzeria Bianco in right. Phoenix, who is the poet laureate of pizza, I call him.
No, I call him my pizza Yoda.
He is a pizza Yoda.
He is. He's my pizza Yoda for sure. And I believe you wrote him a little note saying that, listen, Paulie G tried to get a reservation, because what happened was my son had graduated the
Air
Force
Academy. Oh, yes, that's right. I forgot about that.
There were 15 of us out there because this is a wonderful spectacle and everybody loved my son. And they all came out. And we said, well, look, if we're going to be out this far, let's celebrate afterwards. We'll go to Vegas. So that's what we did. And all along, I've been trying to figure out a way to get to Pizzeria Bianco. So I said, okay, Michael, you and I, we're getting on a plane. The morning everybody goes to Vegas, we're going to
Phoenix.
So I had an 8:30 flight, and I said, I got to get a reservation. And they had, like, you have to call 30 days in advance, right at 6 o'clock. It's like trying to get tickets to the Beatles.
Yeah, and you wait for hours anyway.
Right. Oh, well, I got through 20 after 6.
Yeah.
They say we don't have anything left.
Right.
And I mentioned it to Adam. Adam must have mentioned it to you.
Yes.
Next thing you know, I got Chris Bianco calling me on the phone.
Yes, I remember.
And I couldn't get him off the phone. The guy is just amazing.
He's wonderful.
So we wound up going there. He met with us about an hour before service. We started drinking on an empty stomach. They're drinking on an empty stomach thing, I'm telling you. I don't remember much of what he told me at all in that hour. Neither does my son. But I do remember him saying, you know, I thanked him profusely. He said, don't thank me, Paul. You just pay it forward.
So, yes. That's Chris's. Yeah. Chris's thing is about paying it forward.
So,
and I've taken that to heart, too.
It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And I did it all along, and I have friends now, you know, that are
so now you,
for life.
You've got people interested in other cities, but it's not a traditional franchise.
I'm not going to let you jump ahead that fast.
No, I got to, because we only have so much time.
Right. But people started calling me, people like Caleb Schiff. They wanted to come meet with me to learn about what I did, so on and so forth. So people were contacting me regularly about this. So I was able to weed out people and find people who were interested in this. So long story short, I found people who did this. I have four people now who are either open or, you know, three of the four are open. The other one, God willing, is going to open this weekend. There they are.
So there's Paula G's in Brooklyn. That's yours. Chicago, Columbus, Baltimore, and Miami.
And the only one called Paulie G's with the name of the city is Miami. Because what I've done is I like them to be named after the neighborhood they're in, because we're not this big thing or a neighborhood place. It's Paulie G's Logan Square, Paulie G's Short North in Columbus, Paulie G's Hamden in Baltimore.
And so people come up with the money, or what's the financial arrangement?
Yeah, they have to pay me a little bit up front, and then they pay me X amount of the gross. But they have to soup to nuts build their, you know, they
Got
have
it.
To find a space. I have to approve of the space where they are. There's certain things they have to be able to serve, at least wine and beer. But they have to use about half my menu. They come, they work in my restaurant when they can. You know, a couple of people worked in my restaurant for a very long time. This guy Jason, he would come on Sundays and work during the day and learn how we, you know, did things. And he'd come and make pizza at night. And they do that for a long time. Any way that they can to come to me to learn how to do this.
This is very inspirational, because it's the opposite of corporate franchising. What you did was you identified people who shared your passion and wanted to go on the same journey that you were on. You wanted to truncate their journey. Yours took a long time.
Right. You let them take advantage of everything that I learned. Now, I've learned a lot since about opening up places and what you go through. Because I had a fairly easy opening in terms of construction and everything.
Right.
And now they've gone through all that. But what I've created, I call it my brotherhood of pizza entrepreneurs. And they work together. They compare notes. They call each other. This weekend when we open in Miami, TJ in Columbus is sending down his best pizza maker to help open Miami.
So it's like a support group. It's a pizza entrepreneur support group.
Yes. And once we get a woman involved, I'm not going to be able to call it a brotherhood anymore. I'll figure out a name later. But yeah, we support each other.
Yeah.
I was so gratified that Derek in Chicago is doing, he calls them Logan Squares. It's Detroit-style pizza.
Right.
He had one, and he plays with it. I have these prohibitive P's, things that I don't think should go on pizza, and a lot of them start with P. So he's playing with them. He's coming up with pies that have those things on
them.
And TJ in Columbus did a regular version of the same pie that he did in, you know, just on his own.
Right.
You know, and I was just so gratified that you know, they're working together.
Yeah,
and
that's great.
And that's my goal, to have, you know, I make new friends all the time. It's just a wonderful thing.
So now it's time for this special sauce, All You Can Answer Buffet. It's rapid fire, you know, so what's in your desert island fridge?
Ravioli and meat sauce.
Meat ravioli or cheese ravioli?
Cheese ravioli, meat sauce.
Meat sauce.
Beef, actually.
Yeah. Who's at your last supper, no family allowed? Could be anybody. It could be people you admire. It could be poets.
I want my family there, so I can't.
I know, but see, we always got this thing, and everyone always mentioned their family, so we had to eliminate that as an option.
How many?
Four.
Jimmy C., my first business partner.
Jimmy C.
Yeah, we used to buy low, sell high.
Okay.
On Ocean Parkway. Cliff.
Cliff.
Cliff Hansen.
Who's Cliff Hansen?
He's my best man.
One okay.
of my oldest friends, as is Jimmy. Bill Gorman, another one of my oldest friends.
So you're not interested in celebrities.
And Rusty Bergen, another of my oldest friends.
Wow. You're really keeping it close. What are you eating?
Ravioli and meat sauce.
Ravioli and meat sauce. And
well, maybe a Soho Square from Prince Street Pizza.
I see there's definitely...
Or maybe a New Park slice.
There's a thief, Billy.
Or maybe a pie from Joe and Pat's.
You truly love pizza. These are all pizzerias in New York for people who are listening outside New York that are legendary and justifiably so. And I've been to all of them with you.
Yes, you have.
So, what's your guilty pleasure?
Late night slices at Joe's on the way home.
I love the fact that you're making pizza all night and then you're having, you are truly dedicated. This is a passion that is never ending.
It's not a dedication. I can't help it.
So, what do you cook when there's nothing in the house to eat?
I'll make like a marinara sauce and some pasta.
And some pasta. Yeah. All right. Who's the most interesting and inspiring person you've had a chance to spend quality time with?
Chris Bianco.
Chris Bianco. Absolutely. I agree. Chris Bianco from Pizzeria Bianco, which is now in Phoenix and Tucson. And he also has a restaurant and a sandwich shop. He is one of the truly inspiring people.
Don't forget the bar where we got drunk together.
Yeah, exactly.
Before he had to make pizza.
Yes, exactly. You know, I don't know what else to say, Paul. You are an inspiration. We are thrilled that you came to share your special sauce with us and that Slice and Serious Eats played a role in the development of you paying it forward. So it's really been a pleasure.
Well, Slice, without Slice, I wouldn't be here. It's a great honor to have you interviewing me. I just want to throw something out there for everybody listening. Please don't come to my restaurant and tell me what a great inspiration I've been to you unless I've inspired you to do something. Go out and do for yourself. Do what you love, okay?
Yeah.
Don't be working, you know, for other people's dreams.
Thank you, Paulie G, for sharing your special sauce with us. By all means, if you're a serious pizza hound, head to the Paulie G's in Brooklyn, Chicago, Columbus, Baltimore, and Miami. And I asked Paulie if he was going to write a book. He said only if someone else wrote it, so maybe I have to write Paulie G's book. Anyway, it's been a pleasure. So long, serious eaters. We'll see you next time.